And clients come to appreciate that. They know that I'm their guy, but they know that I'm here as part of a team. Together, everyone achieves more, and that's how you spell team. And that's something that I've hoped that I've been able to help James force to hear with some of the younger advisors here at ICG Next, that it takes a team, takes a village, takes a team to really help foster this type of growth, this type of respect and trust with the client base.
Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. I'm joined again today with James Costable of ICG Next, a New Jersey-based independent RIA. He has brought one of his advisors, Ira Krulik, with him here today. James, pleasure to see you again. Always enjoy conversations with you and your group, and excited to hear from Ira, his experience in the industry and also the transition over to ICG a few years back. So, James, why don't you, for the listeners and viewers here, tell us who Ira is and why he was invited to the party today.
Yeah, good to see you, Garrett. Thanks for having us back on. Listen, Ira joined us a number of years ago. He is, as I like to tell people, you know, if we could replicate Ira over and over again, you know, our firm would even be stronger than it is today. I mean, he's just a wonderful, wonderful person, first and foremost, which we try to fill the firm with good people. But he is the utmost professional that I've met in probably the past 20, 25 years. He had come to us with a background in Wall Street. He'll kind of get into that a little bit. He had this as a second career with Ameriprise, had built his practice, and then, you know, just really started to think about what was next for him. And we had been introduced and had some great conversations. And since he's joined the firm, it's been nothing but a pleasure.
Thank you, James. It's actually a very interesting story how James and I met. And I ended up joining ICG. And as you said earlier, this is a second career for me. I had become a certified financial planner when I was working on my MBA back in the late 80s. And then I became a CFP in 1990. But I actually put my financial planning career practice on the back burner because I was already well entrenched in a Wall Street career. So after about a 25-year a gap between being offered a position and accepting it at IDS, which became Ameriprise. I joined Ameriprise in 2013, 2014. But then after about 4 or 5 years there, I realized that I was advancing a little bit quicker than I guess they were allowing me to grow. I was a corporate advisor there. And then through a headhunter phone call, James and I ended up having a cup of coffee in the summer of 2019. And to make a long story short, in September of 2020, I joined ICG Next. And my only regret is that I didn't meet James in 2014 and joined at that point in time. It's been absolutely a fantastic partnership, relationship. The camaraderie here is second to none. And the ability to allow me to grow and really grow my business has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and I know from, I talk with a lot of advisors that are leaving that corporate culture, right? I mean, every advisor is a little bit different how they get into the industry, but it's very, very common for an advisor's first gig in the industry to be with some type of a W-2 model. Come in, we're going to give you everything you need. You're going to get about a 40% payout. We're going to more or less tell you how to do things, but you're in charge of finding your own clients. We're going to give you the tools and everything you need to, we're going to give you the weapon, but you have to do the hunting, right? We're going to give you what you need to get it done and show you how. And then there comes a point as advisors grow up a little bit in the industry and start to learn a little bit about what they're doing that they think, you know what, there's something, and a lot of times it's money because you do typically more or less double your payout when you go from that model to an independent model. But it's also a lot of times it's not just about the money. A lot of times it's also about the autonomy and about the there are certain things you want to be able to do in your practice that you're not able to do where you're at right now. But for the scary thing for advisors in that seat is that they don't know what they don't know, and it's a big jump. And then the W-2 firms are really going to scare you basically into making it sound like you have absolutely no idea what you're doing out there on this side of the universe. And if you make this jump, you're going to be a fish out of water and all this kind of stuff. From my experience, when I made that transition from something like where you were to something like where you are now, very little about my day-to-day responsibilities really changed. It was just doubling the payout, and I had a little bit more I don't know if creative control is the right thing, but nobody was telling me which funds I could or couldn't put in the portfolios, and nobody was telling me how to run my business. It was a little, I had people there to help guide me, but it wasn't to boss me around and tell me what to do. But I didn't have to worry about payroll. I didn't have to worry about running a website. I didn't have to worry about all these other things. All that stuff was still provided for me. My job and my life didn't really change that much. I just made twice as much money. I have this, James knows this about me. I have this knack for going on these long dialogues that never have a question involved. There is a question somewhere in there. Respond to that how you like, but would you agree or disagree, I guess? I don't know.
And Garrett, I'm actually going to agree with a lot of what you said, and let me jump in. It's interesting that everything that you said about the W-2 type organization, corporate organization, is absolutely correct. But there were a lot of boundaries, a lot of guidelines, a lot of, let's call it, I don't want to say disciplines, as far as, you know, like compliance disciplines, but just the way of doing business. Having been a corporate Wall Street guy for many, many years, I was able to see that a lot of those restrictions was actually not allowing me to really advance and grow and learn and bring on the type of business that I was looking to bring on. You know, for example, I mean, you know, one of the things that James and I talked about early on in our meeting was, you know, the difference between advising clients and becoming a consultant and a partner to a client and to being a salesman. All right. And very much the W-2 model, because it's all about generating revenue, generating commission dollars, whatever, it's sales, sales, sales. And I actually had a couple of incidents with senior management in the W-2 environment where, you know, they would say to me as a salesman, I would say, you know what, I have a little bit of a problem with that. I want to be an advisor to my clients. I want to be a consultant to my client. It's not about the sale. It's about the advice. It's about the trust that comes with extensive advice. So as James and I were speaking, and I'm going to put a pin in that for 1 second, because back in my corporate days, I always used to tell, when I was a senior manager on Wall Street, I always used to tell the guys that work for me, take the meeting, all right? When you get the phone call from the headhunter, take the meeting, because otherwise you don't know what you're really worth out on the street. So when I got the phone call back in 2019, it took the meeting and James and I met, and I really learned in that very first meeting that we had over a cup of coffee at Starbucks around the corner from here, the potential for growth that I would have by going the independent route. But not only the amount of freedom that I would have and the amount of growth that I would have, but the amount of camaraderie that I would have with the other advisors here, that I could continue to learn and I could continue to teach what it is that I wanted to do. So the W-2 model, in yes, they're going to give you a little bit of a paycheck, you know, day one, but they think they own you for doing that. And here with me, this being a second career and trying to be, sorry guys, the purist when it comes to offering financial advice, I knew that this was a match made in heaven. I knew this was going to be the opportunity for me to expand my knowledge, to expand my footprint, for me to share some of my experiences with the youngins in the office here, which is something that I've always loved to do, the mentoring. And that's where the marriage between Ira Krulik and ICG Next, really, that's where the rubber really hits the road, where for everything that I get from ICG, I'm actually able to give back the equal amount. And that's what really gets me up in the morning, getting me to come into the, I come into the office every day. Unless the granddaughter needs me, I'm in the office every day, because if I'm not servicing my clients, I'm learning from the other advisors in the office, or I'm sharing some of my experiences with them.
You said something right there. You're a purist, for lack of a better, I think that was the way you worded it, for lack of a better word, was a purist. And it just got me thinking a little bit there. You know, I don't know if any firm wants to necessarily go around publicly boasting that their biggest attribute is that they're the greatest salespeople in the world, right? Like, nobody's going to do that. Everybody is client first. We put the client first. And a lot of times we use words like fiduciary and financial planning and a lot of these big buzzwords to really help, you know, tell that story. You get behind closed doors and you find out at the end of the day, what they really want you to do is go find more clients to be a fiduciary for, or go find more clients to do financial planning for, whatever, but it's still a sales first mentality. And because nobody really wants to admit the truth about it, even in the recruiting process, I've known advisors who come to me and say, I am a financial planning purist. I am a planning focused advisor. I don't want to have to do sales. I don't want to have to constantly hit quotas and all these different things that we have to deal with as advisors sometimes. And they meet with a firm that gives them that pitch and tells them, yes, we're a planning focused firm. We're a client first firm. And then they get in there and 6 months into it, they find out that that was BS, frankly, and that they still are in the, it's just a different, you know, way to, it's just a different culture. It's a different company with the same culture, right? One of the things that I have really enjoyed about getting to know James and the entire team over there is that he seems to really mean what he says. It's a client first culture and it's a planning focused culture. And you come in there and they're there to support you and grow in your business, but not sit there and throw quotas at you left and right and chase you around with a cattle prod to help grow your numbers. They want to help you grow for sure. And from what I understand, you have grown quite, you know, very significantly in the time you've been over there.
At 150% in the 5 years that I'm here.
Yeah. And I definitely want to, I mean, that's not something to just gloss over. We need to talk about that. You know, that's a big deal. But just speak a little bit to that and that culture that there really are some firms out there that are client first, planning first, and do it the right way. But there are a whole lot more firms out there that claim to be that really aren't. And that's what you have to, as a transitioning advisor, you really have to be careful as you're navigating through that to figure out who really is who they say they are.
Well, and that's exactly what ICG has been. That's the, you know, the way James has always built the firm in the 5+ years that I'm here. So let's go back to day one, you know, when I signed on and James said, here's your desk, here's your computer, go do what you do. And I would sit down and I would talk to my clients and really focus on what is it that you're looking to achieve? How do I help you get there? Never once did I say, I've got this product to put you in or this, that, whatever. It was always about, yes, the financial plan. How do we achieve the goals that we need to achieve? As a matter of fact, the investment portfolio aspect of the relationship by design on my side and something that is very adherent here at ICG is the last part of the conversation. You know, first and foremost, we want to make sure that the patient is stabilized, right? God forbid you need to go to an emergency room. The first thing they need to do is stop the bleeding, stabilize the patient. You know, whenever we meet with a client, whenever I meet with a client, anything that I try to teach some of the younger advisors here, first thing you need to do is when you talk to a client is, how's cash flow? That's the bloodline to a financial plan. You know, are we bleeding at the end of the month? We've got $1,000 coming in and $1,200 going out. Pretty much everything else is on the back burner now because we need to stabilize the patient. So we talk about, you know, the things that we need to do to get the patient healthy, to make sure that we're on a solid footing, to make sure that we've got strategies in place so that we know how to work with some of the client's other advisors, tax accountants, attorneys, things of that nature. And then we start working on, okay, what is it that we want to do from an investment perspective? So it is a holistic approach to a financial plan. The financial plan is, for lack of a better phrase, the product that we're offering, but you don't get there without developing trust. And the only way you could develop trust is by not saying, I got this for you to buy, or I got that for you to buy. I'm looking to be a consultant to my client, to be an advisor to my client, to be a mentor to my client so that they could achieve what it is that they're looking to do. I say to clients all the time, my job isn't to say no. You can't do this. But using the technology that we have here that's provided to me by LPL and ICG Next, I could sit and I could show the client, hey, here's your current financial plan. Now let's start adding the what ifs to the plan. Here's what the impact of those what ifs will do to your plan. If there's real no material impact, then we implement it. If there is a material impact, then we have a decision to make. What else do we need to do? So that's the type of relationship that we're looking for. We're not looking to sell products. We're looking to advise clients on what they need to do to achieve life's financial goals that they've set forth. And that's very, very much the first conversation we had with them. What is it that you're looking to achieve? I say to clients all the time, what are you looking to do when you're no longer working for the purpose of earning an income, because you're not going to sit on the porch and wait to die. So you're going to start doing other things. Well, those things have a financial impact. Let's figure out what impact, whether it's adding assets or subtracting assets or some combination of the two, what are those activities going to do to help improve your lifestyle, improve your financial situation, and hopefully leave some type of a legacy to family, friends, colleges, whatever the case may be. So that's really where James and I very much met up on that very first conversation. We were both on the very same page as to what it is that we're looking to achieve here.
It sounds like it's been a successful move for you. It sounds like an understatement, but backing up to 2020, I mean, this, first of all, I mean, props to you for making a big change at that particular moment in time. 2020 was not exactly a comfortable time to make a huge life decision, as I remember it. But I'd love to hear about how that part, it sounds like after that, it's going great. I know that it sounds like it's been an exceptional move and you're glad you did it, but just that's something that some advisors are a little hesitant to make a move. And hey, I'm not sitting here and trying to say that that's a bad call to not make the move just because you don't want to go through the work. Sometimes it's too much. Sometimes it's not worth it, right? But a lot of times it's not as difficult to transition a business as you think it is, especially nowadays. I feel like it's gotten a whole lot easier with technology and the way we do things now. You know, back in 2013, when I did it for the first time, DocuSign wasn't a thing yet. If so, I didn't know how to use it.
Right.
But tell us a little bit about what the transition was like. How did ICG help? James, feel free to chime in on this as well if you want to talk about your process and how you step in to try to help advisors through that. But what was the transition like from Ameriprise to ICG?
The transition could not have been more seamless. And again, part of my initial Wall Street career was in operations back when I first started in the late 70s. So I'm very used to, accustomed to learning all the technology, the systems, the whole nine yards. So prior to me joining, or I should say prior to the actual transition, I had some of the technology for about a week to 10 days. And so I was able to, you know, literally start at the first menu item and just click all the way down so I could understand what the different screens were. But there's a team here. James made it a point to have me work with some of the team here, that between the different Excel spreadsheets that I created and the emails that went out, my transition, I don't think took more than 3 or 4 business days before all of my clients were contacted and the paperwork was signed, sealed, and delivered and moved over. In my transition, and off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly how many households we were talking. I had one household not come over. And since then, in the 11 years that I've been doing this, I've lost one client only because her son became a financial advisor over at Merrill Lynch. So, I mean, I wish him the best of luck. I actually talk to him every now and then, but I've been able to do that. But the transition in my entire Wall Street career spanning more than 40 years, I've never experienced any type of leaving one, joining another that was as seamless as this process was. The team here, Dan Manzi and Kristen, were absolutely exceptional. The paperwork got filled out. It got sent out to clients. And yes, most of my clients at that point in time were new to DocuSign as well. Click, click, everything came over. And I don't think, like I said, it was more than 4 or 5 business days that the assets started rolling in. So we literally hit the ground running. Very seamless, very professional, and very quick and easy.
And I would say, Garrett, you know, listen, I think Ira's 100% correct. I mean, he had a very, very seamless transition. We definitely have a process that we follow. You know, anytime we onboard someone, which I think is important, right, laying out the steps in advance so that, you know, the advisor understands exactly what support they're going to get and kind of how we're going to go through at different milestones. But in my experience, actually, it's not the processes, it's not the preparation, It's the relationship that the advisor has with their clients. That's what limits attrition. That's what makes the process seamless. DocuSign helps, technology helps, but at the end of the day, the reality is, and this has been my experience over the past number of years, is that when advisor, you know, starts making some phone calls, when they go live at their new firm and they're permitted to do so, the reality is they're going to know very quickly whether their clients are ready to make that change with them. Let's face it, the change from one firm to another, in my opinion, especially on the independent side, is really not the single biggest factor. I would argue that it's not a very big factor in some cases that has to do with the client relationship. It's the relationship that the advisor and the client have. And that's really what clients want to know. I mean, they're curious as to, how is this move going to impact me, which they deserve to know. But I would argue that, you know, when Ira started having those conversations, he knew very quickly and we knew very quickly that his, you know, that bond was tight, that loyalty was deep, that trust was right where it needed to be. And that's what created the synergy. As a matter of fact, you know, that's what we look at, right? In my initial conversations with Ira, which is similar to any conversations we have nowadays, do we think that they're going to be, you know, a positive to our culture? Have to have that. And that has a lot to do with, you know, who they are as a person. Do we think that they have the expertise that we need of our advisors? Yes. Do we think that they have the willingness to kind of, you know, create a caring environment along with competence? That's really, really important for us, is that our client, that our advisors are giving that competence along with the care. I think sometimes those things don't go as side and side as they should. So again, Ira's been a pleasure, and a lot of what he says is right on the money.
For the most part, I would say the lion's share of my client book were friends, colleagues, and family for a very long time before they were clients. Okay. So in the conversation James and I had to have, also had to talk about, and I don't know if this is where you were going to go next, succession. I'm not going anywhere soon, because I'm one of the few people in the world that absolutely loves what he does, and I love where I do it. But I knew that James and I need to have the conversation about how eventually is my book going to transition when I'm kind of like done, so to speak. James and IC Gene X has afforded me the opportunity to mentor my next generation, or the next generation of my book, for the last 5 years. And that's going to continue to go on. So that trust is almost inbred in what will happen when that transition eventually comes to be. I thought it was important to bring that up, because as advisors look to make changes, when they either they're going from one RIA to another RIA, or they're going from a W-2 to an RIA, in the back of their mind, because I've gone on many recruiting trips to FPA events myself, along with some colleagues here, is always something that's in the back of the mind of an advisor that's making a change. What's going to happen down the road? When I was at the W-2 shop, there was no opportunity to mentor or mentee the succession. Whether it was because that was that particular office or the culture, I don't know. But that's not the case here. And that's, again, part of the reason why that relationship continues to grow, and the relationship with the clients and that trust continues to grow, because over time you start bringing in those other advisors to, you know, even if I'm on vacation and someone needs something done, you know, they'll call Dan or Steve or Chris or Joe or someone else in the office, and there'll be a level of intimacy with the knowledge of what it is that I do for the clients, so that there's no hiccup in the process. And clients come to appreciate that. They know that I'm their guy, but they know that I'm here as part of a team. Something that I love to preach to the guys here, and I can't take credit for it, this is an old successories type of thing, But together, everyone achieves more. And that's how you spell team. And that's something that I've hoped that I've been able to help James foster here with some of the younger advisors here at ICG Next, that it takes a team, takes a village, takes a team to really help foster this type of growth, this type of respect and trust with the client base.
And I think that's something that, you know, and it's, look, sometimes I just have to admit my own biases, right? I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm completely unbiased, but I can at least acknowledge my biases. I am a huge advocate, pardon the pun, but a huge advocate for independence for advisors. I think that generally is better for the advisor, better for the client. I think it's better for the industry. Not to say that all the W-2 shops out there, there's anything wrong with them. There's a place for them. There are some advisors that are going to perform better in that environment. And I think that there's a place for that. I'm not trying to be completely against it. But at the same time, I'm a big fan of independence. The challenge with independence, though, because I experienced this when I had my RIA, is that, hey, good side of the coin is I was 100% my own man. I could do it exactly the way I wanted to. Nobody was telling me anything. It was my website. I owned the entire thing, process, start to finish. The downside of it was I was the only person on that island, and there was nobody that I could talk to for advice or talk. I mean, I can remember during COVID, I had friends in the industry, one in particular that would, you know, we'd call each other at the end of the day and we would kind of, you know, talk shop a little bit. You know, why was the market up 17,000 points today or down 17,000, whatever it was? It was a crazy times. But even if we wanted to give each other advice, we didn't have the same platform. There were things I could do he couldn't do, things that he could do that I couldn't do. It was just a different. There wasn't a lot of community. There was no community. You know, you're completely on your own. When you can find that ICG type model where you're independent in the sense of how you operate with your clients, but you're not alone, that's such a glorious middle ground where you can have the best of both worlds. And I think that's really sort of the sweet spot for a lot of advisors is to find that play. And there are some advisors that get on the other side, just like there are some that are going to do better in that W-2 model. There are some that at the end of the day, they want their own name on the shingle. They want their own website. They want the total control of the whole process. And that's totally fine as well. But there is such a large sweet spot for advisors out there who want most of that. They want all the independence with a fraction of the responsibility and the work. And that's really what ICG is providing advisors, is putting you in that position where you've got the flexibility to do things the way you want to do them the right way, but you don't have to on the entire process, start to finish. Again, a monologue without a question. I'll probably trim that down just a little bit.
Well, no, but to jump on what you just said. So here it is, day one. It's September of 2020, and James and Sandy, Ira, here's your desk. Here's your computer. Here's your email. Here's your business cards, whatever, and go do what it is that you do. And my love, my passion is servicing my clients, being the counselor and the advisor to my clients, and I don't have to worry about rent and gas and electric and payroll and heat and whatever. And, you know, based on the relationship that we have, that's all taken care for me. But, oh, hey, I've got something going on a Tuesday. I don't have to be in the office on a Tuesday. I don't have someone checking to see if I'm punching the clock. Or if I happen to decide to go to Florida for 5-6 weeks, I could take the laptop with me. I go to Florida for 5-6 weeks, and I could still see my clients and talk to my clients and take care of things that I need to take care of. Unfortunately, as we all know, sometimes a lot of independent advisors fail because they either can't run the business or they neglect running the business, and that comes back to haunt them. So the model that ICG Next has created is, hey, Will, if you want, you could run your own business and still be associated with ICG Next. But if you want, we'll run the business for you. And you could be independent and you could just service your clients. So the model is conducive to both. And then on top of it, I like the fact that, you know, hey, yeah, I'm a baby boomer. I'm still one of the ones that they say we still have most of the assets around there. Well, but, you know, I'll have some younger advisors come into my office and say, hey, Ira, you know, do me a favor. You know, I've got a client, he's your age, you know, and he's thinking about things like this from someone who's also a baby boomer. Does that make sense? Yes, it does. And here's the reason why. But then I'll go into them 2 days down the road or 3 days down the road and say, you know what? I've got this client who's a millennial or a Gen Z or Gen X. I don't even know what gen they're up to these days. And say, you know what? You're roughly the same age as that client. You know, this is the way they're articulating this particular idea to me. Does that make sense? And the answer is yes. Because we're so free to do what it is that we do, that type of dialogue, that type of camaraderie becomes easier because we're not bogged down with the other minutiae of running a business or ticking certain things off because some senior manager wants me to tick off, you know, this or that or whatever the case may be. So the model works. It really, really works. And that's what's been allowed me. And I'm sorry, I said my assets grew 150%. My assets grew close to 200% between 2025.
I would add something. Well, two things I would add, right? Ira's assets have grown because Ira is really great at what he does, right? And that's the reality. And our ability to help, which we're thankful for, and his appreciation of it, we're thankful for. But we try to build our platform in a way that allows the advisor, to Ira's point, to do what they do, right? Which is advise clients and have that open architecture. And I think if you do that and you do it with care and you do it with a sense of pride, I think it's actually natural for advisors to see some degree of growth. The other thing that I would say, you know, Ira mentioned succession, and I will tell you that in my experience, you know, succession is I don't know that it's always looked at for as long and a gradual process as it should be. It's the best succession plans that I've seen and help people implement are very gradual and implemented over an extended period of time where clients become knowledgeable and comfortable with the organization, advisors that are looking to semi-retire or adjust their how they work or how much they work are able to really find that successor inside of an organization like ours. And we promote that, right? I don't want to be here saying, Ira, this is who you need to install in your practice. And I think that developed naturally over time, right? Ira developed relationships with people at our firm that I think he feels very comfortable with as he thinks about what's next for him. And so, you know, for us, it's been very natural. And I think the way that we've refined our process for advisors that are looking to work indefinitely, we've got, you know, processes and procedures and operations that support that. For those advisors that have some little glimmer of succession in their brain, yeah, absolutely. Let's have those conversations and lay out some framework for what that can look like. But again, I think that, you know, from our perspective, it's all rooted in kind of, you know, how we could help that advisor, you know, achieve what's next for them.
Ira, you're obviously very good at your job, and you can't grow your business 300% or 200%. I guess you can't triple your business in 5 years if you're not good at what you do. At the same time, I'm curious to hear how big of a role has ICG played in that process as well? And maybe a way to say that is to compare the two worlds that you've been in. What are you able, what's freeing you up to be able to grow more now that you didn't have in your former environment?
The platform was very much more conducive to, let's call it, customizable designs for individual clients than it was at the W-2 shop, where there was a little bit more required type of products. Whatever support I've needed from client appreciation, you know, things of that nature, you do have to actually, you know, every now and then remind clients that, you know, just handwritten notes for their birthdays and things like that. So ICG Next has provided that. Technology has been a big factor. The platforms that we're on, the platforms that we utilize, are way more adaptable to what the clients are looking for today than what we had in the past. But I think really the fact that I'm freer to be more independent makes the conversations with the clients a little easier to have. And that's what's really sparked some great intellectual conversations with clients. That's what has sparked the referrals from clients, because most of that has been organic growth. So the environment in which ICG has allowed me to conduct business vis-a-vis the old shop, the freer that I am to suggest what I need to suggest, to have those conversations, to do what I need to do, is head and shoulders what the difference was between ICG and the W-2 shop.
And James, since you've been under spotlighted today, one of the things that you genuinely mean is that you're not just looking for an advisor with $100 million in a heartbeat. You have a particular type of advisor, a particular type of personality, particular set of values that you're looking for. So I want to kind of let you speak to Ira's fitting of that description and what, how is he an asset to ICG as well? Because it is a two-way street as well. I mean, and ICG is benefiting from Ira's involvement and association with you beyond just the revenue he's bringing in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're trying, and I've learned this over time, and in some instances, the hard way, right? When you're trying to grow a firm inorganically, right, which became a part of my career over time, you know, especially as ICG Next has evolved, you sometimes have to go with your gut initially, right? You've got to sit and have a cup of coffee with someone and really got to kind of be able to peg them as someone that could be good for the culture or not. And by the way, the recruit's doing the same thing of us, right? Trying to identify, are we the same old type of firm? Or are we different? I would never say better or worse, but are we different? And so, you know, Ira is unequivocally a commodity in this industry, and he is a huge value to this firm. And there's a reason why I brought him on here today, right? And the reason is because I think his story is a great one. Not a great one necessarily just for ICG Next, but it's a great one for advisors that are out there, your audience that are thinking about, you know, kind of where they are in their career and how they can care for their clients moving forward and the relationship that they have with their RIA or whatever the case may be. And so for me, it was an easy decision, you know, to offer Ira a spot here at ICG Next. You know, our role, I believe, as an advisory firm is really to just offer best practices to our advisors, right? Help them understand that over a lifetime that spans, you know, almost three decades for me, more than three decades for some of our partners here, that this is what we've developed. This is our viewpoint on how we serve, and allowing the advisor to kind of embed themselves in that. And what I've seen is if we find the right advisor, if they select the right firm, and we offer those best practices surrounded with or wrapped with, you know, good operationals and protocols, then the reality is you can achieve growth in different methods. And it doesn't always have to be AUM growth. It could be career growth. It could, I mean, all these different things that I see of our people. Going back to succession for just one moment, and we don't have to spend too much time here. So many advisors that I meet, and maybe this will be me one day, this industry really does define you sometimes, right? For better or for worse. It is very, very much a career that a lot of us embrace ourselves in. It becomes part of who we are. It's become part of what our family and friends know about us. And that's a good thing, right? I think that's some of the biggest, most passionate advisors are the ones that really make this a part of their life. But the second aspect of that, or the unintended consequence of that, is when advisors start to think about moving on, it's a piece of their life that they lose. And one of the things that I've recognized, and you know, maybe I'm going to end up thinking that I'm smart on this, is we're not looking for Ira to leave, right? So ultimately, when he passes the torch, when he starts to think about, you know, the next generation of advisors serving his clients, we've already offered him the opportunity to stay on board in a consultative fashion, use his expertise for mentoring and different technologies that we might be vetting. And so it gives him an outlet to still be part of our firm, just not in the same way that he has been. And I think that's been well received by some of our most tenured advisors that are looking at their next stage, because it's kind of a nice slow transition for them. So it's something that we've been, you know, piloting and that we're working on, but it's so far it's going pretty well.
Awesome stuff. Well, James and Ira both, I appreciate you both taking the time to come on. This is a great conversation. Really enjoyed it. For advisors out there, if you are interested in learning more about ICG and their team, you can visit icgnext.com. I'm assuming James will be fine if you want to, you know, send him an email to jamesc@icgnext.com or give them a call at 732-359-3838. I will, in a very biased fashion, say I would prefer you email me, gear at the Advisor Advocate so that I may introduce you to James, and then I get credit for the introduction. And my kids and my bank account would appreciate that too. So I'd rather you come through me. That way I can make sure it's a good match and do some vetting and all that good stuff. But if you would be interested in learning more, feel free to give me a call, text me, email me, any of those kind of things. I will warn, I always say this when I give my information out. I have had to change my phone settings so that if you're not in my contacts, it will not ring because I get too many sales calls and all that kind of stuff. But leave me a message, send me a text, schedule a time, and I'd love to chat with you. And again, if you'd like to give them a call directly, no problem with that. James and the group there would love to talk. So thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time, James. We'll have a few more times here. So we're still not done. We'll get you a few more words in next time.
Thanks a lot, guys. Nice to see you, Garrett.
Yeah, thanks, Garrett. I appreciate the time.
You bet. See you, Ira.
Bye-bye. Have a good day.